Philosophy and metaphysics that have been handed down to us through the centuries from the dawn of time before the digital age. Listen at freedomizerradio.com or at augustbooks.com. Call in with your thoughts and comments at 319-527-6208. Press 1 to join Ed live on air. And now, here is our host, Ed August.
Dun, 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 dun. Hello, everybody out there. And I'm still here in central Arizona in the Valley of the Sun, where we're continuing to have our nice, mild, early June temperatures of about 107 or 108 degrees. But that's only, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Right now, I don't think it's more than 100 outside. And by 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock tonight, not too long after the sun is down, just a little bit of twilight in the sky, it'll be down to about 100 or 99. So we've got, a good part of the day that we can go out and have a good time and go to the store and take a walk or a bike ride or whatever, So the glorious days of spring. I was talking to my birthday buddy, Ralph, who operates a subway train. Actually, he's operated a subway train, not the same one, for 33 years or so in New York City, and I said it was 170. It's 107 degrees. Do you have any idea what we have right now in New York? I said, I have no idea. It's 56 degrees. 56 degrees in NYC versus 107 down here. So at some point, this poor guy's going to retire, and then I think he's going to go to Florida because he's got buddies down there. And thinking about retiring, it's a weird thing, right? Because in a way, he wants to keep working until he's 62 or 65 or 67. But for every year that he keeps working, he cuts down on the actual retirement years that he's going to have to lay out in the sun and have an umbrella drink. And, look at the girls, run by on the beach and stuff. So, if you really love your work, though, it's hard to leave your work behind. It really is. It really is. So, so much for the local weather. We were down in now this is a little bit off the schedule, but I'm determined to talk about it because I'm absolutely fascinated now because of something that happened last week having to do with UFOs. My friend Suzanne, who's the technician, and she's also right here, thumbs up. She just gave me a thumbs up. We went to spend a day and an evening with a friend who lives just west of the Catalinas that define the north edge of Tucson, Arizona. It's about a 90-mile drive from here in Chandler, Arizona. But anyway, we were there because Suzanne has been absolutely fascinated by this guy. Well, I'll let her tell you about this. Well, a little bit. You think I should talk about it? She's putting my pictures on my site. Oh, okay. Great. So there's a guy named Dr. Stephen Greer, G-R-E-E-R, and he's an enthusiast on UFOs, and he's a lot smarter than David Icke, she says. Well, I guess David Icke has never been face-to-face with a UFO person or whatever. But anyway, so he's lately, along with writing books and making movies about the subject, he's been doing these retreats or conferences or whatever you want to call it, where a dozen or a couple dozen people who are really interested in UFOs get together. Usually they go to a desert location, which is one reason that he was down here in Tucson. They go to a remote desert location where they can have clear skies without all the city lights and stuff, and also not the clouds and fog that you get along the coast. And then he would like give them an evening, a chat, a pep talk, maybe show them some videos or something. And then they would gaze into the heavens, and some of them would, you know, use different cameras. They have, like, for example, this. I used to have a Sony camera that had this zero lux feature where I could see in the dark with it. There'd be not a single light on, and yet you can film something absolutely in the dark. It looks kind of greenish, kind of green on black, you know. But anyway, you could see stuff with there. I once had ghosts when I lived in another house, and I was determined to catch something on the camera because I could hear the sounds. I could hear the sounds of the ghosts, but I never did get any real visual phenomenon with it. But I thought, hey, UFOs, that's a different story. Anyway, Suzanne went out and got a camera that has this night vision feature that films in the infrared. And we went to this guy's house, and he's got this huge backyard, not too many lights shining, you know, so he could look up at the stars. And he was playing songs on the mandolin, and Suzanne was trying to film stuff. And, you know, we were there because Dr. Stephen Greer was having the second or third night of one of his UFO observations, or, you know, waiting for the UFO about 2 or 3 miles north of where we were. So she would look in that direction and see if, you know, anything was up there, and did some filming. And I just did three pictures. I did three photos. Could have been Jupiter. And then there were two stars rather close together, about, you know, like if you hold your hand out, it's like about two thumbs lengths away from it. So I thought, well, that's interesting. So I took a picture of Jupiter with these two stars. And then about 10 seconds later, I took another picture of Jupiter with the two stars from exactly the same angle. And the punchline, I'm getting to the punchline. So in a minute or two. Okay. So Suzanne is, you know, kind of disappointed. She doesn't see very much going on. But then she sees you turned off your camera. But at that point, she was packing up her camera, her fancy camera. And she saw, what is it, like a Canon or something like that? It was something fancy. And she saw flashes and to the north, right where, you know, Dr. Greer was having his conference. And it is said that he has a way of attracting these UFOs. Anyway, and then she saw another flash, and then a third one. But we were already ready to go inside, so there was nothing to be done. So she did not get to film hardly anything. Then when you looked at your film, when you got back home, you didn't see very much on there, did you? There really wasn't very much. You haven't looked at it, for Pete's sake. She's the big enthusiast, and then, you know, I guess she blogged her experience. Yeah, she blogged her experience over at Suze. That's S-U-Z Corner. Suze Corner. Is there any apostrophe or anything in there? No, there's no.
No.
Okay, it's just SuzeCorner.com. Be prepared for some very strange stuff over there, by most standards. But anyway, she's a very good-hearted person, and she's got a lot of meaty stuff, good intelligence stuff that she shares with the world almost every week anyway. But I don't think she's looked at the film yet. That's too bad. So what I did is I let this thing go for about a week, and then I looked at the couple photos that I'd taken straight overhead of Jupiter and the two stars. And so, okay, so here's Jupiter and the two stars. Okay, that's pretty cool. And I look at the other one, and what the hell? It has three stars, and actually there's a tiny one below it. Make it four stars. Two more stars than were there, you know, that I knew were there. I was thinking there's a possibility there was some optical effect, you know, at play. Maybe I wasn't holding the camera absolutely steady like it would have been on a tripod. But still, what can explain these little dashes of light, you know, these little globules of light, perfectly round and just suddenly appearing? Now, the one was like when you look on in a photo, it was like a quarter inch away from the one star, and then the one below was about a half inch away. But I don't know. The only way to solve this conundrum would have been if I'd taken a series, you know, like one of these bursts. You've ever seen, you know, like if you press down on your camera thing, you know, push down on the button hard enough, you know, it might go right. And then what you did is you just took 9 photos, you know, a quarter of a second apart. So if I had done that, then we might have seen movement, because these things were there one and they were gone the next, you know. It's just freaky. Do you have any thoughts about this? What does Greer say about how is his method of tuning in to the heavens, to the UFO? I think what I need to do is press, but then I'm going to get feedback, so I don't know.
Hello.
We might get feedback. I'll shut up for a while. Why don't you take over and talk about it a little bit? Because it's a mystery to me.
Mute your phone. It helps. Yeah, well, what he does is he has these events, and you can pull up talks by Dr. Stephen Greer on YouTube, and he leads his people through meditation events. He says UFOs work. There's 3 things that are not bound by the speed of light, and that is magnetism, gravity, and thought. So he leads these people through meditations, and they invite these ET people who are friendly to come in. And he says, if a UFO is doing something evil, like abductions and cattle mutilations and things like that, it's our own government. We have shot down these UFOs before and reverse engineered them, and they do fly around pretending to be UFOs. So when you see a UFO, more often than not, it's one of our own government projects. But they're real ETs that are friendly do come, and they do hear your thoughts when you project your, he called it, focused thought or coherent thought, that he aims at these friendly ETs to come visit, and they have their beds and their cameras set up and all this stuff. And I don't want to get that close. I don't want to meet one in person. But I thought, well, he's doing it anyway over at this resort near our friend's house. So we visited our friend. We camped out, and we didn't camp out, but we sat out in his backyard and we watched the night sky. We said, okay, if we see anything, maybe we'll get a picture. Well, I didn't get a picture, but I got 3, like, camera flashes really, really high up in the sky. And, you know, I know planes, I know meteors, the Arizona sky, you see a lot. And, I know helicopters. And these, on 3 separate times during the evening, I got this camera flash from super, super high in the sky, and it felt like it was aimed right at my retina. Well, I was goofing around, and I was actually singing to the UFOs, inviting them to come. I was trying to project friendliness, you know, and whatever. with Jesus Christ protecting me from anything evil out there. But anyway, so I was convinced that I saw these flashes that were aimed at me, and my friends didn't see them. Ed didn't see anything all night, but I only became aware, like, yesterday or the day before, that he took pictures of the sky, and he sees things, and there are things in the camera. So I'll get off here. I'm loading his pictures up on his website right now so you can see them. And but that's my story. Just find Dr. Stephen Greer on YouTube. He's got incredible stuff. I've done episodes on him and his events on Mad Scientist Exposed radio show, and I won't be talking about this much in I come on after Ed, but I have other issues regarding science fraud that I'll be talking about today. But anyway, that's our story with UFOs. I did blog about my experience at suzcorner.com, which I linked to from madscientist.exposed, and you can find me all over the web. Anyway, so that's my story. I'll get off and give Ed a show back.
So isn't that fascinating? Dr. Greer is fascinating, and I believe that he is aware of how he got aware, I'm not sure, but he's aware of a number of different alien species or races, you know, that are that enjoy Earth. They like Earth. There's a lot of different, you know, places from the galaxy that like to come here. Maybe they're doing research. Maybe they're doing recreation, you know. Maybe they're going around in a state of invisibility or something. But, I mean, he describes, you know, there's the grays and there's the, you know, I don't know the different species of races from different, I guess race isn't the right word, species, extraterrestrials from different planets, different worlds. But sometimes we've been watching, she started watching it, and then I got onto it, Secure Team 10. Secure Team 10 and this guy Tyler, who's like a 27-year-old or something, but he's a tremendous UFO enthusiast. And people send him their videos and their stories and stuff. Every day, almost, he's got a new video of, it'll either be about UFOs and actual sightings of UFOs and films of UFOs and various different types of unexplained phenomena in the sky, or it'll be about anomalies on the moon or on Mars, you know, and some of this stuff is absolutely fascinating and in some cases frightening. The idea that there might have been colonists at some unknown previous epoch, you know, on the moon. And where were they from? Were they from a previous civilization on planet Earth? Or were they from some other world? And why would they be colonizing and doing, you know, research or mining or whatever it was they were doing on the moon? Or has this been going on and we just don't know anything about it, and NASA never says anything about it, and none of the heads of any of the countries in the world say anything about there being actual humans right now on the moon? Maybe there's even on Mars. I don't know. Mars has some amazing phenomena that are so hard to explain. Let's see. If you were to Google search or DuckDuckGo search, I've been using DuckDuckGo rather than Google because Google just doesn't work for me these days. It'll just sit and spin. I don't know why that is. But anyway, go with DuckDuckGo and enter the word Mars anomaly, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y, anomaly. And lo and behold, I'll get a bunch of sites. Click on the different sites, find the best site that has the most photos and the most reputability. Those things are pretty easy to tell. And then you look and see, you know, what they got. They got strange characters. They've got practically figures waving at you from the distance. You know, they got something sitting on a rock, you know, looking right at the camera. The strangest thing on Mars right now is that one of the rover that is still continuing to move around the planet and film, has been there, was supposed to last for about 3 months, and then they expected that the solar panels would all cover with dust and stuff, and it would slowly lose its power, whatever. Well, it's been there not for 3 months, it's been there for like 10 years, and the reason it's still going strong is that every so often, something cleans off the solar panels 100% clean. They've taken pictures of it when the thing can take pictures of itself, you know. But somehow they've never caught a picture of when this cleaning operation takes place. So it might be that it's a windstorm comes along and blows everything off of it, you know. It's just not known what's doing it. But whatever it is preserving the functionality of the solar panels and letting this thing continue scooting along from crater to crater and hill to hill. They don't have it ascending any big mountains or anything, any steep inclines, because who knows, it could fall and roll over or something. She says a friend on the project, who's actually, I think, University of Arizona, isn't it, down in that area? The Lunar and Planetary Lab at the U of A, and he designs some of these instruments and rovers and things, but he says it's from dust devils that come up every so often. Well, I don't think they've ever filmed a dust devil, though. You know, they should have photos, at least, of dust devils. You know, the Martian atmosphere, they talk a lot about winds on Mars, but there's about 10% as much atmosphere, maybe less than 10%, on Mars as there is on Earth. So how severe can the wind really get, you know, with that little of an atmosphere? Anyway, that's the next step for humanity, I think, is if they can establish a foothold on Mars and not ruin it with too many, you know, McDonald's and gas stations and stuff like that, you know, and resorts. Yeah, if you're a millionaire, you could fly to Mars for a week. I don't know. I think that would be, I don't know how fast they could get to Mars. Isn't it going to take 6 months to get to Mars no matter what? I mean, it depends on where Mars and we are in our orbits. There would be times that would be totally inopportune to launch a rocket to Mars, and other times where, zoom, you know, it could get over there in a month or two, I guess. But, this may seem like a big aside from my usual subject matter, but, hey, this is Ed August's World. It's a small world after all. And with Ed, with what? Add worlds to it. I'm just adding worlds to the Ed August Worlds. Ed August World. Ed August Worlds. Z. Plural. So, anyway, I was hoping that we'd get a caller, a Daniel calling from Tucson, to speak about some astrological goings on down there. That's one of my loves of my life is astrology. And I haven't been to the Astrology Guild in Tucson in some years now. And it was weird. I showed up one time at the Astrology Guild. It's like everybody knew who I was. And I'd never been there before. And I'd never talked to anybody there. But they must have known me from my work. So I was thrilled about that. I mean, I've written a few books and whatnot that I'll get into later. But anyway, so I haven't been there in a couple of years. And then Daniel, who I did some astrology work for a couple of months ago now, a major project, a major, major astrology project, he got so fascinated that he went to the Astrology Guild and had an interesting time. And this was, I guess, last month. And this month he's going back again. I think it's going to be just in a few days. Today is Thursday. I presume their meeting is going to be on Saturday. So now he may call today or he may call tonight. In fact, I think what he's probably decided to do is to call tonight instead, because that'll be my Ed August Psychic Astrology show, Psychic Astrologer, I guess. And that'll be more opportune, you know, more apt to talk about astrology during my dedicated astrology show. The reason I was hoping he would call in during Ed August World is that this is a 90-minute feature, so we could talk about stuff for a while here. We really talk about this kind of thing quite a bit and see how astrology has worked out for him and his loved ones. And, there's always something new going on. He was going to call in a couple days ago, and I didn't see the phone call, or something happened. And then I realized that Mercury, planet Mercury, was in 29 degrees and 53 minutes, I guess, you know, of the sign of Taurus. And when Mercury is at the last degree, especially the last half degree of a sign, then it's almost like its functionality for communication and travel and salesmanship and whatever, all the different things that Mercury is noted for, including contracts and deals and, wow. But, you know, books and writings and communication in general, all of that is kind of dimmed and shunted sort of out of the way. I mean, that's the kind of condition where if you turn on your computer, it might blow up on you or something, or the Wi-Fi might suddenly collapse or something like that, you know. This is by experience. This is by anecdote, but it's also by actual experiences that people have, that's like a bad time to do that. So I think I had a couple call-ins. Call-ins didn't work out very well either. I did one reading for a woman on the astrology show before the Ed August World Show on Tuesday, and it seemed to make sense. And then later on during the day, she quibbled to me about it. She said, there was a bunch of stuff that she just was quibbling about. She just did not want to take that reading at surface at the level that I gave it to her. And the question was, should she go visit this guy at night at his ranch? And the answer was just, no, I don't think so. The major card that came up was the Eight of Swords, where a woman is standing barefoot in what looks like a mud hole, and she's bound and gagged, her hands behind her, and blindfolded, and there's a kind of like almost like a wall of a stake of swords around her, eight swords, you know, around her, keeping her from getting anywhere. That is not a card that indicates that you should, to answer in the affirmative, that you should go visit this guy at night. What? No, don't. We can't talk about that. It's supposed to be secret. All that stuff is supposed to be secret. Hoodoo and voodoo. Hoodoo and ghostly stuff. Portals, all kinds of stuff like that. But don't go there, lady. Just don't go. No, she had to quibble with me because really, you know, she wanted to go there. And you know what? She asked the question at the wrong time. She asked the question during a time when Mercury was dead in the water. There's actually a word for it. When the moon is in the last part of its sign and is not making any more aspects to any planets, it's called void of course. The moon is void of O-F course, C-O-U-R-S-E. And I guess you could say the same thing for Mercury. And it's just a time when in the Middle Ages, if someone came to an astrologer and said, you know, ask whatever question, you know, is my soldier, you know, lover coming back from battle or whatever, you know, am I going to find the horse that was stolen, you know, and everything. And when the astrologer saw that the moon was in the last degree or two of its sign and not making any aspect anything, then he would say something like, the moon is void, of course. It is not a good time to ask this question. If anything, all I can say is the answer is no. The answer is no. Don't do it, or don't expect the best, expect the worst, you know. Probably what would be better is if she asked the question again like a day later, 2 days later. So that's why I was hoping that Daniel would call in so we could talk a little bit about astrology, because I do have 90 minutes here at my fingertips. Pardon? How can I call him? Really? Right here? Does that say invite? Well, that'll be surprising. Well, it might shock him. And you know what? He's a character. He's a kind of a character. He may respond to this. He may not. Now, let's see. I've got to scoot from where I am right now to a different page. Let me go to a page where I can actually see his phone number. Is it too early to make a break with a commercial or two while I try to do this? We sometimes like to, we at Freedomizer Radio. By the way, I am part here with this show. I'm part of the Freedomizer network of shows. And it's a very ambitious project operated by a guy by the name of David Kelman. And he has Suzanne and me and other people with you know, filling up 15 hours a day or whatever with new material. And then at night, it goes into reruns. Very ambitious program. It's a very expensive program to put on. The whole watchword for this is freedom and independence and not being a plaything of, you know, the government or the deep state or the establishment or whatever you want to say. I think that's a common thread. Like when I do a show on astrology and tarot, that's not something that is looked at, positively by the establishment. You know, sure, people love their horoscopes, but, you know, they're not interested in seeing how astrology could help the world and, you know, by helping to determine what kind of character a person has, or you know, actually I think I'm kind of glad that it doesn't. I'm glad that the establishment totally ignores astrology, cozy up to astrology and start using astrology. Then I think it would be just another tool by the powers that be to control us pedestrians, you know, plebeians, whatever you want to say, proletariat. All those people in the masses would be controlled by the people that are in charge of things if they could use astrology against us. And then they might even get, you know what they might do if it ever hooked up with astrology? They'd say, well, I'm so sorry, but your child was born, at 11:58 p.m. during the eclipse, there's really bad vibes around this birth, and we're going to have to take him to Never Never Land, you know? I mean, you don't know. They're trying to cut back on the population, you know? I mean, I know it's not ever mentioned in the mainstream media, but there are tremendous titanic forces and very powerful billionaires who have actually come out and said that we need to cut back on the human population. Some of them have erected the Georgia Guidestones. It's unknown who actually authorized that, but they say the world's population should come down from 6 billion. Well, at that time it was 6 billion to 600 million or something. They want to get rid of literally 90% of the Earth's population. And you know, some people, I don't know how you feel about Bill Gates and his career at Microsoft and the monopoly that he's had for so many years and the billions and billions of dollars that he's done. And I know that you know that he has done some philanthropic charity work. But if you look at some of his charity work, he's talking about cutting back the population. I don't have the quote right here in front of me, but it does exist where he said, you know, like, Bill Gates on population control. But Suzanne, was he involved in the Central African thing, the vaccines in Kenya? Let me put you back on for a second because I'm. Yeah, that's fine, but let me just put you on just for a second.
So tell me a little.
Yeah.
Well,
he's on YouTube. I mean, you can pull up videos of him saying that we need to cut back the world population, and he lists a bunch of tools on how to do that, including vaccines. And then, lo and behold, we had the Kenyan incident a year and a half ago where the doctors in Kenya got suspicious that they were they had suddenly escalated the tetanus vaccine schedule for women of childbearing age, but not for men and boys. And so they surreptitiously had them tested, and sure enough, they had been spiked I think it was HCG, which made them immune, it made their bodies fight their own pregnancies. So it was causing massive miscarriages, and just a horrible thing. Just a horrible thing. And Snopes actually, it was bizarre. They cited the doctor's press release, the Kenyan doctor's press release about finding this, and then just declared it false. With nothing to back it up other than, oh, well, they're not marketing it to American women because American women would want this. And so we declare it false. And I called them out on it. It's just a horrible thing. It's a weaponized thing. And so anyway, this touches on what I'll be covering in my next episode, which, you know, I try to mix my light episodes with my dark episodes because I don't want them all to be dark, but it's just hitting too close to home with them administering this DTaP vaccine, which is the tetanus vaccine, to American women now, and they're vaccinating up newborns, and it's my goal to stop this madness before I have any grandchildren, but I'm not in time for a friend's grandchild.
Coming back on here, the reference is that just last night, she was told by a woman who, well, she works in nursing care and social work, and who ought to know about this kind of thing, that her newborn granddaughter, her first grandchild was given the tetanus? The DTaP. And the baby was given the hepatitis B. And within one day, or how many days did it take?
Sent home on a Monday.
And rehospitalized with seizures on Thursday, and now she's been there a week in the hospital, and it's just cutting too close to home. It's just a little too close to home. You hear about people that have the children get violently sick and end up with all kinds of health problems after, you know, being vaccinated. But when it happens to a dear friend's grandchild, that's a little too much. So I'm sure that Suzanne is going to go into that a little bit later. Well, probably about an hour and a half from now, 2 hours from now. And, you know, with that, 1 hour. Okay. When I come back, I will have a different subject for you. Hopefully it will be intriguing. Let's shift over to the world, the wide, wide, wild, wild world of books, collectible books, used and rare books and stuff like that, and talk about that. So just after a few words from our Freedomizer sponsors.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where Freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to freedomizerradio.com and also Facebook us right at freedomizerradio.com. Catch you there.
You're an activist. You have a cause and an idea, but you also have lots of questions. You need help. After all, teams have coaches, corporations have consultants, and even politicians have campaign managers. But who do activists turn to? The Solutions Institute. We are a collection of professionals and activists from across the political spectrum. Our goal is to teach, motivate, and put all the necessary tools for activism in your hands without charge. Learn more or submit your project at solutions-institute.org.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer Radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Call in our live number at 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. Mm-hmm. Press 1 to participate on the air.
My name is Dr. Eric Norman. I have studied vitamin B12 deficiency for over 35 years. I have developed the urinary MMA test to detect tissue B12 deficiency early, allowing treatment and prevention of permanent disability. B12 deficiency can cause anemia, but also neurologic problems such as spinal cord degeneration, paranoia, and dementia. B12 is found only in animal sources, so vegetarians become deficient.
Okay.
As people age, they may not produce enough stomach acid or intrinsic factor protein for absorption of B12 and become deficient. Up to 10% of seniors may have a normal serum B12 level, but a tissue B12 deficiency causing a 3 times greater risk for heart attack, stroke, or Alzheimer's. For more information, visit B12.com.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from libertystickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's libertystickers.com. But wait, there's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to libertystickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. Libertystickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Okay. I'm disconnected? Oh, well. Oh, okay. Wait, let me get back on here. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? I'm not disconnected. I'm going to cancel it. I am so sorry if that came across on the air. I was trying to get a conversation going with my old buddy Joe in Kokomo. No, in Los Angeles. Actually, Brentwood, an upscale area of West L.A., No, that's okay. I can't do it from here. Believe me, I can't do it from here. Okay, I was trying to get a hold of him, but you know we can talk anyway. I can talk to him another time. It would have been a total surprise. He wouldn't have any idea that I was going to call him from the radio show. So anyway, Joan and I went to high school together. We both went to Santa Clara High School and met somewhere along, let's see, I must have been a junior, he must have been a sophomore. And what brought us together was a third party who was interested in Edgar Rice Burroughs, and he had come up with a magazine called Odwar, O-D-W-A-R, which means something in Martian, according to Edgar Rice Burroughs, anyway, who was a writer who wrote about the John Carter series, John Carter of Mars series, and Thuvia, Maid of Mars, and other Martian characters, Tars Tarkas, and others, in the basically the 1920s, when he wasn't writing about Tarzan. You know, he always liked these alpha male guys, you know, swinging from trees and stuff like that. So this goes back to Ken C. Free. And this was a guy that I met at Blackford High School before I switched high schools from West San Jose to Santa Clara. Best thing that ever happened to me, by the way, moving to into a big high school in a city rather than something out in the sticks like Blackford High School. But anyway, so he was into all this ERB. That's another fanzine, by the way. So he wanted to get this fanzine. Fanzine, F-A-N-Z-I-N-E, going, and Odwar. And so I participated on it with him. And I hadn't even really read that much. I really didn't know that much about it. And so I contributed a story called The Emerald of Mars, or it was something like that, The Emerald of Mars, and also did a couple of pieces of art. And, God, I had a copy of Odwar number one for, like, many years. And he was, you know, we were excited about this magazine of Edgar Rice Burroughs and science fiction and, you know, all this stuff. So the World Science Fiction Convention was coming up that, you know, early that summer. And we were out of school already. And so we figured a way to get up to Oakland, California. And Leamington Hotel, and I had just met Joe at that point, but he did not come along. You know, this was just a project, I guess, of Ken and myself. So went up to the Leamington Hotel, and we saw some real astounding science fiction stuff there. There were panels, there were discussions. I would sit there, and I would almost, like, after a while, I would tune out and fall asleep because it was over my head. The panels were talking about elements of fiction writing and science fiction and horror and stuff like that. They were kind of fascinating to a point, but I just couldn't clue in to everything that was going on. There was a room where people were selling books, and I got a whole bunch of first editions, early first editions of things from Ballantine. For example, Ballantine had a series of ERB and other sci-fi authors at that time. This was 1965. And at one point we had, who was that little guy? Who was that little guy? Little science fiction writer, Harlan Ellison. Harlan Ellison came into the foyer there and into the ballroom where these discussions were taking place and everything. He was dressed in a suit and tie. And gosh, I think, you know, I'm not trying to say anything about the guy's size, but he was like about 4'9" or something. He's a shorty. And I'm sure he's still a pretty short guy. But anyway, he was on his arm was a tawny, gorgeous 6-foot black woman who was dressed in cellophane. As I recall, she was dressed in cellophane, and you know, everything wasn't showing, but it really looked pretty snappy, you know. And so I guess he liked to make great entrances like that, you know. But anyway, and then you know, everybody said hi to him, and I don't know what happened after that. And it was a weird situation. Some pretty weird things happened at this convention. And anyway, and that was all that happened. It was Odwar number one. So at some point, at some place along the line, Joe Garrett was introduced to me by Ken C. Free, whose mother, I think, drove us to see his house, and he lived near the Santa Clara Central Library, which was on a round, perfectly round driveway, and his house was on one side of it, you know, so he could go to the library in like about 20 yards, anytime he wanted to. But Joe was a great guy, and we palled around because he was going to school and I was going to school, and he introduced me to a whole crowd of his friends, including Wade and Tisdale, who's a other very unusual character who has spent the last 10 or 15 years of his life at the Hermitage down at Big Sur. I believe he's still there. I'm not sure. He was working there as some kind of, you know, some kind of maintenance role so that he could stay there because it was on top of a hill overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Pacific Ocean was 1,300 feet below, and the nearest town was Big Sur, about 15 miles north, and then there was Gorda, Lucia, and Morro Bay. Morro Bay would be the next real city, like about 25. No, pardon me, not Morro Bay. San Simeon. San Simeon and Hearst Castle. That was about 25 miles south. And so it was very isolated. It was isolated then. It's isolated now. It's isolated like a son of a gun because they had a big landslides on Highway 1, on U.S. Highway 1. One of them brought down, you know, like 13 acres of dirt and rock on top of the highway, and they are just not sure. They are absolutely not sure whether they're even going to be able to restore that highway. And so, therefore, if you look at the Camaldolese Monastery or Hermitage, and they got a wonderful website with lots of photographs of how beautiful it is there. And, you know, there's like about 20 monks that live and pray and work there. And it's an offshoot of Catholicism, I believe. I believe they're all Catholic. You know, how they have Cistercian monks and Dominican monks and Jesuit monks. And well, these are Camaldolese monks. So anyway, but there's a lot of wisdom written on their website if you go into it. So Joe discovered the Camaldolese monastery independently of anything else that was going on. And he told me about it back maybe 10 years ago, that he loved to go there. And he would go there and he would spend a week there or a month there. I think the longest that he was ever there was for like about a month. And it was like people can apply to go and they can stay practically as long as they want, but they have to make a contribution of some kind. So, I mean, you know, it would be probably more than if you were spending those nights at a state park, more than $5 or $10 a night, but not as much as if it was at the Hilton or even the Motel 8, you know. Plus, you get this enormous spiritual vibration there under the blue skies of the Big Sur Mountains and, you know, with prayers and, you know, up at dawn and going to bed at when there's still twilight in the sky, you know. So it's a wonderful refresher from Los Angeles. And that's where he lives now, is Brentwood, which is a fabulous little suburb just west of UCLA and Bel Air and that whole area. Brentwood, Bel Air, Beverly Hills, they're very, very similar. And then, of course, it all blends into Santa Monica. Then you go to Santa Monica, and that's even more fun because then you're down by the beach. So I was there visiting, and we were going to go someplace. So we went to some bookstores, and these are bookstores I'd never heard of. It was a little neighborhood there in West L.A. And, well, actually, pardon me, it was probably between West Hollywood and West L.A. Could have been somewhere close to Melrose. I'm just not sure about the neighborhoods in L.A. But anyway, but there were about three little used and rare bookstores almost next to each other, you know, around the corner from each other. And, you know, I always find something that I like, and so does Joe. Joe's a book guy, and so am I. Now, Joe also had a tremendous collection of comics. For decades, he had comics. I got rid of I didn't get rid of my comics. My comics were destroyed by my brother when I was a child, and I never had the heart to build up another collection after it. But Joe kept his comic books, and actually that fits into my book theme for Get Rich Buying at Yard Sales, a book which I'll talk about again in a few minutes, but which I've talked about before. because it is possible to make money with this stuff, you know, with your collectibles. I mean, he had his probably his Superman and Batman and whatnot comic books. I'm not exactly sure what he collected, but he kept them until, you know, some point in the 1990s, whatever. He checked around and he found that they were worth a heck of a lot of money. I mean, a heck of a lot of money, some Golden Age stuff, you know, from the 40s and 50s. And he sold them. He, doggone it, he sold them. I think he also had some posters. Well, if I get Joe on here, maybe I can. Maybe he can call in, or I can call him sometime. I just tried to call him, but I couldn't get through. I think it would have been too much of a surprise. I mean, who wants to be called from a radio show that's in progress? You know, I think that would have been rude of me to do that, to connect with him. So I'm glad we didn't get through. Glad I didn't get through. Wonderful character, though, and he knows the whole Hollywood scene. He knows writers and some directors and whatnot. And he worked for many years as a copywriter in L.A., very successful copywriter, and he's also the author of several scripts, several plays. I think, yes, definitely one of them was an award winner. I'm sorry I don't have all the information at my fingertips. But anyway, so that's a person I can draw upon to talk about collectibles, ephemera. Well, ephemera would be things like magazines and posters and to some extent comic books, because they're hard to maintain in good condition unless you put them in a plastic bag. I'm sorry, what? What do you mean time sensitive? Oh, ephemera. Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess there's one definition of it being time-stamped stuff. I think of it as different. I think of it from the Latin root, you know, that would mean ephemeral. I mean, ephemeral meaning temporary. Yes, that's what I'm trying to say. It's not time-stamped. It's not stamped with time. She says it's time-stamped. Time-stamp somebody's butt. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that. That's a different concept. I just hadn't thought of that as time-stamped. You know, time dependent. Yeah, and if people don't take good care of it, it wastes away into nothingness. It reminds me of a dust jacket of a book I have by Henry Miller that he did in 1934 or something, and it's slowly falling apart. And I put it in a box, and I looked at it a year later, and it's slowly more falling apart. And I put it up on a shelf for a while, and now the front cover is totally detached, you know, from the dust jacket and stuff. And you really, you know, you have to put these things away properly. They gain in value, you know. It's similar to owning a house, and all the houses in the neighborhood are going up in value. But let's say you leave that house sitting there, and, you know, the rain gets in and the snow gets in, the wind blows through the windows, and small animals come in and live in the house and stuff. Well, you know what? The neighborhood could have gone up from $50,000 to $500,000, but it could be that that house, when it's not taken proper care of, could be worth, you know, less than anything else on the block, you know, even if it's a magnificent house, because it's not cared for. I really do try to care for all my books. It's very unusual for one of my books to deteriorate. Usually what I do with my excess books, I mean books I don't have shelves for at the current time, is boxing them in banker's boxes. So there's no more than maybe 20 books per box. And pile them up about 7 high if you have to. And fill up a, you know, 10 by 15 storage locker with those books. And that's, in fact, that's what I have right now. So I have 2 storage lockers like that. But anyway, yeah, there's the glory of collecting. And then there's the disappointment of not being able to show off or even, you know, have your collection at your fingertips if you have to put it in storage. And that's happened to me several times in my life. But I've also had houses. I had my house in Henderson where I had 4 bedrooms plus a L-shaped family room, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. And I had space in the living. My living room was filled with fiction, nothing but fiction. And then the L-shaped family room was filled nothing but nonfiction, and it was a total of like maybe 12,000 or 14,000 books. And then all my metaphysical and occult stuff, religion, some philosophy, psychology, anything weird and unusual, was in my den or my office room. I guess you'd call it my office because it also has computers in it and stuff. So yeah, one has to have the space. And then when I sold that house and moved down into a smaller house, and then finally into a smaller apartment, much smaller apartment, well, I had to sell some things off. I had to, you know, tried to keep the best of the best. But it's very tempting to be a collector and for a collector to turn into a hoarder. I never really wanted to be a hoarder, but I just love books so much that it's much easier for me to buy them than it is to sell them. So as a dealer in used and rare books, of course, then I'd put my books in a bookstore. My last brick-and-mortar bookstore, I could only put about half of my books in there because I had so many by that time that I could only put about half of them on display at any given time. I got a bookstore that was too small. It was like 900 square feet. People would drive by and it would look like just a tiny little thing. They didn't realize it was crammed full of books and candles and, you know, other good stuff. And paintings. I also had paintings and stuff. It's hard to have bookcases when you have paintings because the paintings vie for space with the bookcases. So Joe, I hope we can contact here and plan to be on one of my future Ed August Worlds, because 90 minutes is hard. It's actually hard to fill out 90 minutes. So we're coming up on 1 o'clock Phoenix time. Why don't we do another set? Okay, well, I'll keep talking then. Doggone, you people at home are lucky because she's crashing and she can't run any commercials for me. So you have to listen to me instead. Or we could play one of my songs. Can you do that? No? So I've had interesting ideas in the past. One of my ideas in the past is someone local that is within 20 miles or whatever of wherever my store is, wherever I'm living, they come in with a bunch of their books, and I pay them, you know, a fair amount for their books. It could be, you know, $20. It could be $200, and then those books are mine, and then I work with those books or store them, save them, put them up online or whatever. And then another concept that I've never really completely worked out is where somebody brings in their collection of books, which do have some value. Could have been their uncle's or their grandparents' books or something, and there's some good titles in there. They don't want to mess with them, but they don't want to give them away either. They don't want to sell the books at an estate sale for $1 a piece or $3 a piece. They know some of these books are worth $50 or $100. So then the concept there has been that they share the books with me, and I research the books and I put them up online for sale, and then we split whatever the profits are at the end, because I've put in my research and I've put it up on biblio.com or sometimes on Abe or Amazon or whatever seems best, you know, for these books. So I'm doing all the legwork, and then I'm also going to the post office to mail them, you know, package the book, mail the book, etc., you know, take the payment. Take a credit card payment. It is a pain in the butt. It really is to sell anything, I think, online. I even tried to do it on eBay for a while. Was not really too happy with eBay because of all the tiny little 15 cent and 25 cent charges that they have, you know, and I don't know, fiercely competitive on eBay. Probably a better place to buy than to sell. But I haven't used eBay since like 2007, I think. When the financial crisis came about, sales on eBay just plummeted right into the ground. And I was left holding some charges from eBay without any further income from eBay. So there went eBay, you know. But still, Biblio is good. Amazon is really good for generic, ordinary books that people are not really for collectors, but for people who just want a title, you know. Amazon has this nasty, well, not really nasty, but kind of a thoughtless shortcut where if you have a certain book to sell, guess what? Amazon already has a picture of what that book should look like. So you can sell your book. That photo of your book automatically goes in there. Well, guess what? The cover of the book that I'm selling might be totally different from the cover that Amazon has. And I got to, you know, kind of really push and shove to get my photo in there instead of Amazon's generic photo. I've noticed what some people say is the photo of book cover may not be identical to the actual cover of the book that we are selling. So it's just one little quirky thing about Amazon. But it does sell really good. I mean, it has a real good potential for selling $8, $12, $15, $20 books. But I don't see any reason to put a $200 or $300 practically one-of-a-kind book up on Amazon. For that, I would use Biblio, which does not charge until you actually sell something. So the beautiful thing is it's not charging $29 a month or whatever, like maybe Advanced Book Exchange or Libris or whatever are charging. And even more by the really fancy ones like the ABAA, you know, I can't even think of the acronym, what that acronym stands for at the moment, but it's the fancy schmancy booksellers, you know, that have the multi-million dollar inventories and stuff, you know, a lot of them back east. But I do my best, you know, I've had some really good sales just on Biblio and just off my own website. Although right now I don't have too many books on my website. I'm recreating the website. At some point a couple years ago, we took all my books down. And we were going to do something with the website, and it just never completely came back up again. Well, I was learning. Well, don't complain. No, I mean, I am. I'm loading them onto Biblio, but I'm loading them slowly. So if there is somebody within the sound of my voice who has a collection of books that are just sitting there, and you don't need those books anymore, and you wonder, what the heck? Well, we should talk about that, you know? Write me an email at ed@edaugusts.com. That's ed@edaugusts.com. And also have a look at edaugustsbooks.com. I have some of my inventory on there. I have a tiny slice of inventory because I said I've just been a little delayed putting them back up. But I'm always looking for books, and I think that the books that I want the most is if anybody out there has a collection of, you could call them New Age, or you could call them occult books, anything heavy on astrology or tarot or anything like that. I've had several wonderful opportunities. When I was back east for a while, I had a phone call from a guy who said, I see you've got, you know, some interesting books in there. Would you like to come over to my house? Because I'm retiring and I can't afford, you know, to keep the books anymore. I said, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Yes, I'd like to come over. So I came over to his house. So what he had is he had his front room and a couple other rooms subdivided by bookcases. So in other words, in the middle of his living room, he had two rows of bookcases going right up the middle. And the same thing in one of the other rooms. And I glanced in the shelves, and he had all this stuff about the mystical arts, you know. I think I got 12 different Manly Palmer Hall books there. Manly Palmer Hall was an esoteric author who wrote back in the 1920s and 30s. One of them was Secret Teachings, I believe, Secret Teaching. Big, oversized book. This was the best edition available of this book, and it was autographed by the author. Several of these books were autographed by the author. So anyway, so there was a collection of some authors' astrology books. Alan Leo, he had like a 10-volume set that he did around 1910 and in green binding, lovely gilt on green binding. I finally sold that to a purchaser in Australia, down under, and I had to send it down there. It was the hardest thing in the world to figure out how to send books from America to Australia without paying $200 in the process. And I also, let me see what I also had. Oh, gee, I had, what's about? Oh, yeah. He had a side interest in mountaineering and on Central Asia. That means like Nepal and Tibet and the Himalayas and Sikkim and Dharamsala and wow, that whole area, the Gobi Desert. But anyway, it was many of these were explorers who went through there. That's where I learned about Madame David Neal. What the heck was her name? Madame something something David Neal. And anyway, who was a woman from France who had attended Sorbonne and learned the Tibetan language from thousands of miles away. And she snuck into Tibet, posed as a man. Well, she was a big husky woman, but she posed as a man, and nobody doubted her, I guess, that she was a guy. And she lived there for years and observed their rituals and some of their strange goings on. So that's where I learned about her. And there's also books by some mountaineers and explorers. Sven Hedin, S-V-E-N, Hedin, H-E-D-I-N. And he had a book about going into Tibet. You know, Tibet was kind of such a wild and unknown region, and all kinds of wild stories were told about it. And, you know, Lhasa, its golden city with its central kind of temple residence of the Dalai Lama that went up a mountain, you know, like a 12 stories high, this little central temple, and all the experiences people had. So anyway, so there was also that. But so I think this very nice, charming older man, well, I guess he was in his 80s by then, he sold me this wonderful collection, and it was for good money. I mean, I gave him cash and I gave him a check, and I had to run around, you know, scrambling to get things squared away with my finances so the check would clear. But he was glad to see the books go to somebody who loved old books and books of the occult and of the esoteric, you know. Oh, yeah, there were books about theosophy. Started by Madame Blavatsky, a very strange character back in about the 1870s, 1880s. And you know, went from New England to India, to Adyar, India, and back again in London. And, you know, it became a real movement. Even now there are still theosophical temples and stuff that are almost extinct because the people that used to go there don't go there anymore. So the property is still, the real estate is still there, but you know, do you know any theosophists right now? Do you know any practicing theosophists, you know? After Blavatsky, there was, what was her name, Sinnott. There was, there was Olcott. There were several Ledbetter who did a bunch of stuff on the chakras and the auras and stuff, trying to blend some Eastern mysticism and yoga and Hinduism, you know, in with the Western teachings and spirituality, and of course spirits, because they really, 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 really believed in spirits. Of course, I believe in spirits too. I've lived in two haunted houses, and so you know what? This might be a good time. We can drop in a few commercials on you because we need to keep up our obligations to the Freedomizer Network. I'll be right back.
How would you like to make your work more enjoyable, be more creative and relaxed, all while sitting at your desk? That's exactly what my Serenity Rug has done for me. This revolutionary footrest, I can't even call it a footrest, because this thing encourages movement of your feet, which results in more blood flow. While traditional footrests advocate the motionless placement of your feet, I found that I'm unconsciously digging my feet into the long, soft grass strands of the Serenity Rug. It delivers an incredibly relaxing sensation that closely resembles the feeling of an exotic foot massage. If you have ever had a foot massage that made you want to stay there for hours, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not heard about the Serenity Rug, check them out at serenityrug.com and join the exclusive Serenity Rug community and enjoy a feeling of comfort and relaxation that most will never experience. They've sold out before, so I suggest you do your feet a favor and grab one of these. Again, that's serenityrug.com.
Do you want to live a happy and healthy barefoot lifestyle? join Barefoot is Legal Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time to learn your rights to live a barefoot lifestyle. There are no laws against bare feet in public, and we are here to dispel the myths and empower you to stand up for your rights. Join full-time barefooter and victims legal advocate Nick Pierce on Freedomizer Radio or the Barefoot is Legal Radio Show Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, 10:30 a.m. Pacific, and check out barefootislegal.org.
Solutions to Delusion. How do you do this? Well, join me every Friday night on the Delusion Solution Radio Show from 6 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time and 9 to 12 midnight Eastern Time right here on the Freedomizer Network, where we will be discussing and discerning the times by making sense of current events and bringing to light much-needed topics. Our calling number is 347-324-3704 to listen in. Watching with your ears and listen with your eyes. I'm your host, Tara Dawn, and I'll see you there.
Tune in to the Mad Scientist Expo Show every Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific, where we discuss the science in the news today, take a closer look, and expose where fraud is being committed for various agendas, from money to politics to downright pure evil and malice. Of course we trust science. It's scientists we don't trust. Tune in and join the conversation on Tuesday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific, on Freedomizer Radio.
Hey, Freedomist, join me, Proof Negative, weeknights, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific, as we fight the New World Order together, right here on Freedomizer Radio, your exclusive home of the Proof Negative Show.
Call in our live number at 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. Press 1 to participate on the air.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
And, of course, Freedomizer Radio is part of the Blog Talk Radio Network, which goes back, I think, about 20 years. I don't know how it's doing as compared to other media. I think probably it's doing fine, she says. I hear a little voice saying, it's doing fine, goddammit. But you know what? I'm on Facebook like everybody would, a billion people on Zuckerberg's little tool there, you know, Facebook. I hate it. I just don't like Facebook. Okay, so I've got, you know, maybe 100 followers. So do you know what? I don't know who half of those people are. I have followers on Facebook that are posting memes and posting cartoons and posting photos of their grandchildren and their cat or whatnot or what they ate for dinner. And I don't know who they are, and it drives me kind of crazy. There's one very lovely lady who actually posts, she's actually part of the Freedomizer Network, but she's posting like about 10 updates a day on Facebook, and it's like, oh my God, you know, it's like, okay, that's funny. I like this, I like that. I'll comment about this one, I like that. But then I can't handle all that much volume on it. I can't handle. I've never met the woman, you know. I like her humor. I know she's got a show. But, you know, too much is too much. But other people are doing the same thing to me. And also the whole format of something about Facebook there that just, I just lose it. I mean, I may have seen an update from somebody an hour ago, and then I go back to look at it again, and I can't find it. Or I find it again, and I want to take a screenshot of it, and I can't take a screenshot of it for some reason, or I can't send it to anybody. It forces me to go into Messenger. I don't want to go into Messenger, and you know, where they basically control your computer. I don't know. It's just also, I know it's, of course, it's intrusive. It's looking at all my likes and, you know, who my friends are and whatnot, and selling it to people. Well, you know what I wish? I wish that about 400 million people that are using Facebook all the time get out of the Facebook habit. Get out of the Facebook habit. Realize that the friends that you have on Facebook are friends that you could be sending text messages to, and you could be sending emails to them. And you could also be going and visiting them at sites that are topic-specific sites. You know, like, well, let's take, like, for example, a show like Proof Negative, or how about Barefoot is Legal? Okay, B-I-L, Barefoot is Legal, is one of the shows on the Freedomizer Network. And I didn't know this. I didn't know that anybody could run around barefoot anywhere they want to. I mean, I don't know how you feel about that. It sounds a little bit scruffy at first glance. People walking into restaurants and none of them are wearing shoes and stuff. But anyway, it is legal. There are a lot of people that love the barefoot lifestyle. And one of the things that I learned from listening to the show a few times is that people that run that go around barefoot don't have foot problems. They just don't get the fungus and the mold and all that kind of stuff from having to wear, you know, socks and shoes all the time. As a matter of fact, socks and shoes are crazy when you could be running around barefoot. I'm wearing socks. Why am I wearing socks right now? I'm going to take off my socks right now. Ah, oh, that feels so good. That feels so good. And one of our sponsors of Freedomizer is the Serenity Rug. It's like, it seems like it's like something about the size of a little cat box that you put your feet into, and it's got these long tassels of stuff that feels like, there's a picture on the Freedomizer website, and the long tassels of, I guess they're green, I don't know, they're meant to be like grass, and you kind of like put your toes in. Can you imagine your toes wiggling around on the Serenity Rug? You know, it's supposed to lower your blood pressure and who knows what, and put a smile on your face, you know. I mean, if you're looking at a Playboy magazine, make sure that your feet are in a Serenity Rug at the same time, for even better results, you know. So there you. She's laughing. She doesn't like that stuff. Hey, I'm a guy. I know about that kind of stuff. I know about this stuff. So anyway, where was I? Yeah, what I was saying is, what is the big freaking deal about Facebook? It is so opaque. You know, you're thrown every third, sometimes every second thing that you see there is an ad. It's a suggested ad, or it's a sponsored post, you know, by somebody or other. And then there's also the political swings that it takes. I saw one of the things that I answered yesterday was something by the Democrat Party about how do you rate the performance of President Trump, you know? And I thought, well, what the hell is the Democrat Party writing me to ask about what I think about the performance of President Trump? So I answered, because I used to be a Democrat. Well, I don't want to talk about politics. I hardly ever talk about politics, although I have been talking about politics more since I moved to Arizona than when I was a, quote, California boy. Yeah, I have had such a radical turnaround as to be incredible. But anyway, I would not call myself, let me just put it this way, I wouldn't call myself a liberal, Democrat, progressive at this point in my life anymore. And the people sending me this survey, you know, I answered the survey, but I answered in terms to make them feel bad and insult them and stuff. Why are they sending me this crap? You know, they just, at the bottom line is, if you get to the bottom line, it's they want me to send them money for their, you know, congressional run or some crazy thing like that. So to hell with that. So anyway, so let's get rid of all this ultra dependence on Facebook. There's no reason for a billion people to be on Facebook. There's no reason for a billion people and the business that they're, you know, the advertising that they're churning up to make this guy Zuckerberg, this kid Zuckerberg, to be one of the most powerful, you know, guys in the world. I mean, it got to the point where he went and he bought the Washington Post he bought? Zuckerberg bought the Washington Post. Somebody bought the Washington Post. Was it Bezos? Okay, my mistake. It was Jeff Bezos that bought the Washington Post. And, you know, I don't know. I think that's all very strange what they're doing. And they're trying also to limit certain topics and freedoms, and so people cannot speak out. Same thing is happening on Twitter. Now, I've been on Twitter since 2008. I went through a big period of time of building up my followers on Twitter. I have just short of 2,000 followers on Twitter, and I think about 1,700 or 1,800 that I'm following. And Twitter is really bizarrely changed. I find that there's hardly any real people, quote unquote people, on Twitter. What I get is one post after another of something where they're trying to sell me something. Somebody's trying to sell me something, programs or seminars or a book or something. And it comes down to American business, and of course they're entitled, but I don't see how you can make a community out of that. And also, what the hell can you do with 140 or 160 letters and spaces? I think it's still 100. Is it 140, do you think, or 100, something like that? It's just not enough to post anything substantial, so you have to put links in there. So you're taken off the site to follow the link that pops up. You don't know how good that link is. You don't know where it's going to take you if you get a virus or something. So I'm not even using Twitter that much. And I can guarantee, except for some famous people, some well-known people that are in the news that I'm following because they're pundits or geeks or, fabulous artists or something like that. Because I like artists, artistry, some musicians. But anyway, except for that, I don't know who any of these people are. I really don't. I think at one time I massively followed people that mentioned books in their posts. So I would follow 100 people a day that had mentioned books in their posts. Then I would see how many of them followed me back. So let's say 50 of them followed me back. That was fine. Then after a while, if those other 50 didn't follow me back, I would cut them off. I would delete them. And then I'd go and get another batch. And that way I got a big number of people that were interested in talking about books. But I also had a separate one about tarot and astrology. So about half the people that I had on there were interested in, esoteric arts, and then half of them were just anybody that likes books, because I have books and I have, I have my own books. I have a series of books that I have done that, I don't know if we have much time. We have only 8 minutes left in the show, but let me show you something from my gallery. Let's see. I just have to get to a screenshot here. So if you were to go to www.lulu.com/storefront, I think it's storefront/Ed August, or maybe it's just Ed August, you could get my storefront. And there I have books that I have written. The Sacred Desert Womb Pool by Ed August. Paperback. Phoenix, Arizona can be plenty inhospitable in the summer. And faced with a big backyard of nothing but dirt and sand, author and astrologer Ed August decided to change the vibes by, and what I did is, it cuts off there. What I did is I constructed my own pool. It started as a wishing well. It started as a wishing well, and I filled it with water, and I would watch the moon in the desert sky. And then I got more ambitious, and I made the pool bigger and bigger until it was 9 feet wide and 14 or 15 feet long. And then I would fill it with water. It turned into nice warm water during the summer. And then I started doing these not really regressions. They were kind of like rebirths. I started doing – it just came to me to do this, just came to me from, I guess, my psychic side, my esoteric side, that I could do rebirthings in that pool, that I could take someone's natal chart and wipe it out by dedicating themselves. As they're laying there in the pool, floating in the water like a child, like a baby that's just born, from its mother's womb, and give them the planets of that moment. Well, so I did that for myself one time, and I neglected to see that Saturn was rising at that moment in the heavens, and Saturn does weird things. Saturn is not a good influence. So immediately afterwards, I went down the road, and I went through this alley, and there was all this metal crap, all these gears and parts and spanners and fenders and all this stuff that had never been there before. It was as though I had opened some pathway, some new alternate reality. And I got to the corner of 19th Avenue and Southern in Phoenix, and all of a sudden a truck zooms past me about 10 feet away from me and hits a car, a station wagon, and spins the car around about three times with screaming women and girls in the car, and the truck continues on, a white passenger truck, you know, continues on and hits a wall next to the Walgreens on the far side of the street. And, you know, and this, the kids were okay. Everybody was okay. They were shocked. They were stunned. But I sort of saw that as a personal, as a sign that I had not done this rebirthing properly. What I did is I very carefully waited until under the exact right aspects of Venus. And because Venus was going to be rising, I thought Venus is much better than Saturn rising. And so I did my next rebirthing where I lay down in the pool, floating on the water, and imagined myself giving myself up to the universe and to the planetary vibrations of that moment, just as though I was born again. And voila. So this time I dress and I go and I'm walking along, and I find this crystal rock, this crystal thing that's shaped like a wedge, but it's made out of, it's not transparent crystal. What do you call that kind of crystal rock anyway? Like a white crystal rock. And it's like about 3 pounds, quartz. It was a quartz rock, yeah. And I subsequently, I think the next week, I put it up on sale on YouTube as being a mystical weird rock or something. And somebody paid me $100 for it. Somebody in Louisville, Kentucky, paid me $100 for my crystal rock. And that same, the same trip, the same venture, when I went out there, I found something glimmering in the gutter, you know, between the sidewalk and the street. And I scooped it down, and it was like a little bit of gold chain, gold, real gold chain. And then in subsequent days, I found a ring of some kind of the ring that people get when they go to school. It's a school ring, black onyx, and then I found it was 14 karat gold with black onyx in it, and that was worth it. Well, you know what? That all goes exactly in keeping. That's all fits exactly in keeping with the vibrations of Venus, and Venus has to do with all that stuff having to do with affluence and beauty and luxury and jewelry and collectibles and all that good stuff. So I think I was back on the right path with that. But I realized from that a person has to be very careful. They're really trying to handle fire. I was like Prometheus bringing back fire to mankind with my ideas of a rebirth. So that book is The Sacred Desert Womb Pool. It's in paperback. It's $9.95. If you go to lulu.com, she's right. Okay, go to books by Ed August, I guess, huh? Yeah, there's two pages of books by Ed August, and this is one of them that I'm telling you about. This is one of them. So there's a book, there's a page of books by Ed August, and there's a page of more books by Ed August. And there's some, you know, the other books on there. Some books I'm retyping stuff that I thought was very interesting, that was in the public domain. It was in the public domain. For example, I have one called Fairies at Work and at Play. It was by Geoffrey Hodgson, who's a Catholic mystic who in the 1920s, a theosophist and Catholic mystic who in the 1920s truly believed he could see gnomes and fairies and elves and many other kinds of leaping and dancing figures. Well, anyway, so that's available right now at EPUB. It's an ebook for $4.99. It's available on the iBookstore. I think that's an Apple product, isn't it? The iBookstore. So anyway, so I have books in paperback, and I have books on ebooks, and I have other kind. Don't miss my Vlad the Impaler and others. That has to do with Vlad the Impaler and others consists of 39 movie and book reviews. It includes classics, little-known thrillers, newcomers, and popular directors, and goes from straight horror, you know, into the supernatural. So that one is $9.95. Dreams and Visions, that's all there is. That's a good one. If you are interested in Sigmund Freud and Jung and Adler and Casey, Edgar Casey, and some other, you know, philosophers and psychologists. So, and I include in there their personal dream worlds and my personal worlds of dreams and nightmares and visions. Dreams, nightmares, visions. That is really so seductive to me because it offers an alternate view, you know, an alternate experience of life, like a life that's lived nocturnally, you know, like you turn off the lights and next thing you know, you're in a different world. But that's another of my books. Now, that one is more substantial. It's a little bit thicker. So I think it's $12.50 for that one. And this has my cover art. It features one of the pictures that I did when I was about, you know, 19 years old of castles and buildings and towers on top of a romantic hillside. So I've got books about all this stuff. Okay, here's an erotic one. Here's an affectionate romp through the sexy women of cinema, fashion, erotica, and real-life sexuality of men who adore women who dress up in sexy lingerie. It's called All the Girls in Nylons and Garter Belts. And this, I think, goes back to my childhood when I first was aware of how beautiful women were and how lovely they are when they're dressed, you know, to the nth degree. And there wasn't much for me to do in the orchard as a little kid except to, you know, get lost in the worlds of my imagination. A lot of this was imagination that was also enhanced by the fact that my older brother had a tremendous collection of this kind of stuff. What's that? I'm going to have to wrap it up. Our show is coming to an end. But if you like, if you're intrigued by those three or four books that I mentioned, and also all these others that I have on here on these pages, which are available for sale, then just go to edaugustsbooks.com and look for the pages of my books for sale. And thank you so much for being here. And look for me tonight. I'll be on my astrology show at 8 o'clock Pacific time, 11 o'clock Eastern time. And my UFO pictures, thanks to my technician Suzanne here, are on my website. Which website? On the book site, we have UFO? Okay. On the edaugustsbooks.com, there will be pictures of the shots that I took. I only took two photographs, and they show something weird in space and right above the head where the UFO thing was going on nearby. And I'm going to just say goodbye, and we will talk to you soon. I'll be back here again on Tuesday.